This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th. And it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger. Definitely some disgust.
Gross.
And I think a little fear. But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor's going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Hey guys, Maria Menounos here. Before your favorite TV after show begins, we want to let you know about my new show on Sirius XM Stars Channel 109. It's called Conversations with Maria, and it's live Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Go to conversationswithmaria.com for more info. Buzz you later.
You're tuning into the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
It's a temple! My temple!
There we go. Libre. Oh, man. See, I'm so used to like songs that keep going.
Just repeat it.
Can we just keep that looping?
Loop it.
I made it 13 seconds solely for that purpose. I was like, okay, it'll come in.
There we go. Just keep it going. Keep it going, guys.
Loop it through the whole show.
Guys, welcome to episode 2 of the official Lucha Underground After Show right here on AfterBuzz TV. We'll be here every Thursday night. It's Thursday night. We'll be here every Thursday night talking about the entirety of Season 2 all the way up until you know what's coming. Ultima Lucha 2. That's right. Our favorite show of the year. My name is Ty Matthews, as always. You can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, at Ty Matthews PMA. It should be right down there with the wonders of technology. Joining me, as always, my amazingly talented co-host. Who are you guys?
Oh, I'm Jared Gilkerson. That's at Gilkerson Radio on Twitter. I'm pumped to talk about this episode,
woo,
baby, yeah.
Woo.
And I'm James Frank. You can follow me on Twitter at TheJimboSlice. That's TheJimboSlice.
Yeah. Bam. And Jared, we talked about this a little last week.
It's still going.
Open. Let's just keep going.
Yeah, right. Sorry.
We love Dario Cueto here. I cannot get enough of him saying, this is a temp.
Yeah.
My temp. Ring the bell! I should not be screaming. There we go. Now, Jared, we talked about this last week. Yeah. You are still relatively new believer to the temple.
New believer.
What are you thinking so far?
I'm loving it. And part of the reason, because... you get kind of, it gets kind of jaded when you watch so much wrestling over the years. You just take moves for granted. And now, when I see something like a really good suplex, or I'm like, whoa, like, okay, cool. Like, mm-hmm. I like the basics. So when I see them bust out, like, there's just move. I kind of like when I'm like, oh, the guy's getting choked.
Right.
I'm like, cool, let's slow this down a little bit. So it's kind of...
Chinlock City.
I'm all in for a deep arm drag.
Mm-hmm.
So, everything, I'm like, the senses are heightened. So it's like, oh my God, these fantastic high-flying moves. along with like the basics, it's just everything's really exciting. Like, exactly. I love this episode.
Yeah, you got to temper it. Really, you got to temper it. Yeah. What'd you think, Jimbo?
I loved how it started with like a recap intro and like get us back up to par.
It's previously on, like, man.
Yeah, previously
it's,
on.
It's like we said, it's not so much a wrestling show as it is a show about a wrestling show. And Jim Cornette would have some salty words to say about that aspect of it.
Oh,
but
man,
that's one of the things that
up.
I think we love about that.
Yeah.
Now let's start off before we get into the episode proper. Let's get into some news. Some news and some rumors.
Ooh. AfterBuzz TV news.
Man. It's like there's a new sound drop every single show that I do.
Love it.
I'm so happy. I have so much power.
Ring the bell.
Now, obviously, right off the bat, the biggest news of all, Lucha Underground is already greenlit for season 3. Trace, guys.
Can't. Oh, my God.
Cero,
I love it.
Trace.
Yes.
Junior.
Now, it was... Let me get my composure, because I'm a little excited.
He's so excited.
But after the...
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga, Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
The first season, it took us a while to get confirmation on even season 2. You know, there was a lot of people that thought that maybe this would be it. That we would see that sweet shot of Dario Cueto looking like the friggin' devil. And we thought that that might be it. That it would end on the world's least satisfying cliffhanger. Because we wanted so much more. So we had to wait for season 2 confirmation. Now, we're not even... This was before...
Yeah. It was like... Before episode 1,
two.
I was like, oh, by the way,
and
we're coming back for
season 3.
We've
already got season 3 coming up, guys.
I that's so exciting because I really feel like, especially after social media, and I feel like after the beginning of season 2 here last week, it's just, it's through the roof. And then all the promotions through ESPN and just, it's really on like a national, like a huge landscape here.
Absolutely.
And it's not good. And here's a case in point. My girlfriend she saw me watching some of the show. It piqued her interest. She's like, wow, the costumes are really elaborate. And she's not used to seeing that. So,
sure.
And it's so different. And that really intrigues people. Like, you know, it piques people's interest to see that. It's just such a different show. Like you said, it's a show that happens to have wrestling in it.
Right, so, right.
Yeah. You could, like, flip the channel and catch one of those, like, vignettes. Like, if you turned it on while Prince Puma and Pentagon were having their conversation
Weight
in
room
the locker
battle.
Room,
right.
And then you see the Guile flash kick,
so
you're
going
to be like, what is this? Like... And then you, and it's like, here's our first match. You're like, wait, this is a wrestling show?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Guys, we talked last week so much about Mortal Kombat. We're starting things off with Street Fighter. But yeah, not only that, so we've got the confirmation for season 3. As far as rumors go, there's a lot of word going around that other companies might be trying to raid the Lucha Underground roster.
Makes sense.
We've heard about Angelico getting a lot of attention. We've heard about Prince Puma getting a lot of attention. Things like that. I mean, it's who do we think that Lucha Underground would stand to lose the most if they lost?
Anyone who drives a motorcycle.
Right.
A lot of the roster. Oh, man.
That's a hard
question.
That's a hard one because everyone contributes so much. Yeah.
There's so many different aspects of it.
Sure.
I love how when they've taken talent that have been elsewhere, it's really not even close. They're completely reinventing them.
Exactly.
But not reinventing them to the point where it's like, the wonderful this
right,
version.
Right, right.
It's a completely different
whole new
version
character,
with a little bit of their past. But it's they don't need to steal like any ideas from anywhere. It's like just all brand new content.
Sure.
Yeah. What's the guy's name that kidnapped Sexy Star?
Oh, Marty the Moth Martinez.
Yeah, that guy. There's a prime example of that, of like not
he's
like
great.
Trying to like
yeah.
oh, we're just gonna add Super to his name or we're
right,
just gonna put
right.
him in a mask.
Well, Super
that
Marty
dude,
Martinez.
Like,
yeah, the Super
that
Moth,
dude
yeah.
is like quite a character. When we get to that little vignette later, I wrote down it was like Silence of the Lambs meets Dandy from American Horror Story.
That's exactly.
And it was just like
it
so creepy because he had like the neck sweater and he was just all proper,
sure.
but he was just like so eerily creepy and like, see this butterfly?
See, I'm excited. I'm excited to talk about that. that now that you brought Dandy into the mix. I'm super excited. But guys, let's get into season 2, episode 2 of Lucha Underground.
Ring the bell.
Now, yes, marks our official timekeeper.
I'll stop.
Now, Mil Muertes is still overlooking the temple, but his arm is in a sling now. Even as an undead zombie luchador, he's still got to get that arm kind of wrapped up.
So I'm confused. So what if you broke every bone in his body? Would he just be like...
Just in a body
watching all the matches, he's like, just kill me instead.
They have to wheel out in a hospital bed. He's like, I'm gonna get better.
Is that just you wait? Is that the way to defeat him? Like, just break him down to the point of almost dying?
And then just leave him?
You just leave him, and then leave him up there.
But then, as we saw in season 1, he got locked in a casket. That thing flew open. He opened his eyes. He's even more powerful now. So I think he would just hold his breath, pop that body cast off, and you'd be effed.
Oh, man.
In a major way. But as you said, we get that sweet gym segment where Prince Puma, he's pumping iron. We haven't seen him since season 1. We saw him on the premiere. We saw him saving Ivelisse at the end of episode 1. But, he's getting a pump on, getting a sweet pump on. And he's so rudely interrupted by Mr. Cero Miedo himself, Pentagon Jr. And we find out that tonight's main event will be a handicap match, 3-on-2, Pentagon Jr. and Prince Puma taking on the trio's champions, the Disciples of Death.
Yeah.
And Pentagon Jr. even says, look, you're going to help me break these fools' arms, but after that,
it's you and me.
You're done too.
Yeah.
Like, he mixes no words. There's no, like, oh, will they, won't they, is there a little dissension? Like, no, they hate each other straight off the bat. We're starting this episode with them fighting.
Yeah.
How backwards is that?
It's so weird.
Yeah.
It was so weird.
It helps with, like, a really cool dichotomy. Like, as soon as, we'll talk about it later, as soon as they enter the ring, I mean, it's a story within a story, in the middle of a story.
Right.
And I love how Puma, like, he's like, I'm not getting my curls interrupted.
He thought he was done. The weights.
And then he turns around and then he keeps going. and then I think that Pentagon's a little jealous because he's definitely behind in the curl aspect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then they get their fight on.
Exactly.
In the weight room where no one else can
lift. He does not like to be shown up.
Yeah.
In the curl department.
No, at all.
But we see that sweet fight. We see the guile
awesome
flash
guile kick.
And all of these... all of these legitimate Puma growls.
I wrote that down, too. And then, like, his sound effect growls. Like,
sure.
I was like, oh, that's great.
It's insane stuff off the bat. We expect nothing less from the likes of Prince Puma and Pentagon Jr. But let's get into our first match of the night.
Let's do it.
Johnny Mundo taking on Killshot. Got to say... Killshot is low-key maybe one of my favorites on the roster right now.
Another guy who, like, never heard or seen of before Lucha Underground.
Right.
I'm just like, where has this guy been?
Right, exactly. You
know? Why do you like him? I mean, why
is he there? Because I think one of the things that I love about Killshot is that his build is so different from anyone else on the roster. He's really lithe. He's really kind of lanky. And he uses that when he uses those kicks. You know, and Helico, he's lanky, but he's just overall just a little bit bigger. Whereas Killshot is a little bit thinner and kind of has to rely on his reach.
He's got a body like the guy from Revenge of the Nerds. I don't know what that guy actually
which
is.
One?
I don't know.
The main guy?
No, not the main. No, I'll have to pull that later. I don't have the reference from Revenge of the Nerds.
That works.
But he looks like he's wearing a, like, it looks like they just, like, they're like, oh, we're not sure what to do. Like, give him a mask. Like, I'm not sure, like, what is his gimmick?
It seems like, and I don't think they're trying to say this in so many words or kind of try to hit it so on the nose, but it seems like he has a background as a sniper.
I was going to say, he seems like the hired hitman of, like, we need to take out somebody, send Killshot.
Well, and we even see down to the bullseye. I mean, it reminds us of Bullseye from Daredevil. Exactly, yeah. And so it seems like he's got this sort of experience as a marksman or as a, you know, a sniper, things like that. But that really, he's kind of incorporated that into his style and into his arsenal in a lot of ways just by really a lot of headshots, a lot of head kicks, a lot of, you know, DDTs as we saw, things like that.
Dude, he did that setup in the corner where, like, Mundo's about to go for some jump.
Right.
Super kick to the knee, props him on the second rope in a way that, like,
that
you normally never
position.
See.
Right, right.
And then nails a sick DDT and hops right up for a 450. I was just like, this kid.
Yeah, that
sequence.
And then
he had, like, another crazy combo. Mm-hmm. It was just like, oh, man. Like,
well, and even in the first I think, 10, 15 seconds of the match, Mundo goes for a kick, and he does that almost Matrix-style
gainer.
Fall back into the, into the kip-up, but yeah. He also does the gainer,
too. He does
the
gainer over the top. I'm yeah. Just like, what?
Just a lot of amazing stuff. And we, now, in season one, we saw him in a crew with the Mac and with Big Rick. And so now it seems like he's kind of going off on his own, as is the Mac, who we'll speak to later.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what did you think of this match, Jared?
I love seeing Johnny Mundo because I'm really familiar with his history.
Sure.
And I love seeing a little bit of that, I'll say, like, American-style flair and, like, just an actual entrance. Mm-hmm. I feel like if the one thing that's a little lacking in the show is recognizing a theme, like, oh, it's them. Mm-hmm. I don't hear it yet because it'll probably click with me a little later.
Right.
But with at least Johnny, it was, I mean, he had the, you know, like the bedazzled, like, I like that ridiculous.
Sure.
That's kind of what I'm, so I kind of like to see that difference in the ring. You've got kind of a lucha classic, like, you know, lucha wrestler, and then you'll see this guy that's, you know, kind of your typical cocky American fighter, and I love seeing because he's such an outcast, and all the chanting of, you know, Johnny Zero,
right.
I love that. So I love seeing the difference. So he's such an outsider, so it's kind of cool to see that character as an outsider in this, you know, wrestling show.
Right. And that was, yeah, that was such a deep, deep two count. The fans even chanting that was three after the super kick, the jumping DDT, the 450. I mean, that, you would think that that was completely done.
That's crazy.
And I think that that does a lot for Killshot as well as a character.
Definitely.
Because we didn't really see him outside of trios matches in season one. And so now getting such a close call on one of the main stars of the show is going to do a lot for his standings.
Definitely.
It's a match where it's such a plus for both of them. That, like, you know, you lose, you win, but you each are elevated from it. So,
right.
Yeah. Which every match should be.
And that's another one of the pros of Lucha Underground, is that even if guys lose, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later, even if guys lose, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're weak or that they're, you know, they're not as good, you know?
Ty, can we talk about that spear, please? That's...
That spear that got, not sure if it deserved the holy S chant that it got. I mean, it was a great spear, a phenomenal spear.
Sorry, I'm just making fun of the crowd a little bit.
Johnny Mundo hit Killshot with an admittedly dope spear on the outside, but it got such a wild reaction. You would think it was through like a brick wall.
Yeah. There was a weird part where like Killshot did like a roll and then jumped up and hit a cutter.
Right.
But they didn't have like the camera angle right.
Exactly. They cut
so it was very
right
weird.
At the cutter.
I was just like, what just happened? And they're like, oh, what a great cutter. I was like, he just had a cutter? Like, what just happened?
Yeah. So.
What do you guys, second.
No,
what do you guys think of I bring up again the aerial cam. And I don't know if I like seeing a wrestler who's kind of selling injuries and selling being hurt, but then you get that aerial cam and you can almost see in their face like, one, like, kick out. Like, you can kind of see that they're waiting for the kick out a little bit. You know, this happened a lot in the next match. But I don't know. I kind of feel weird. I kind of like that classic side angle with a kick out.
And that makes sense. As, you know, as pro wrestlers, we're not really trained to be looking for a camera up there. So that's kind of one of the only respites that we really get is during a near fall. But, I mean, that's got to add a whole new layer of complexity to ring awareness and to camera awareness.
That's a good point, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's like... you really have to be fully aware that anyone could be seeing your face from any angle at any time.
Yeah.
So you have to be fully immersed in the story and in the character. But I agree. It's different. It's definitely different. Yeah. And I think sometimes it does expose things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a weird part, I think it was either in match two or match three, where like they went to the aerial camera and they showed like the cameraman like running to the ring to get started.
Right.
Like they didn't have it set over the ring yet. So it was just like, oh, go to the camera. Oh shit, we're not in spot yet. Like get it into position. Okay, good. Like,
so ever the villain, Johnny Mundo, you know, he flies elbow first right into referee Rick Knox, takes him down, sends Killshot up and over, classic Lucha Libre style foul, back kick, right to the junk.
Yeah.
Follows it up with a springboard kick, followed by the end of the world, for the victory.
What was funny is, like, when they did, like, something else, and it was like, one, two, kick out, Johnny Mundo turned to Rick Knox, and he's like, uno, dos, tres.
Right,
like,
right,
to the
right.
whitest referee, tell him to count three in Spanish.
Oh, I love Rick Knox.
And when he got hit, I love the crowd's reaction. It's such a, I mean, it's an overly smart crowd.
Sure, sure.
But as soon as the ref gets knocked out, everyone just cracks up.
Right.
Laughs. It's great.
Rick Knox. I love Rick Knox.
I want to get him in here.
My absolute favorite referee. We should.
He's got
referee Rick Knox. Let's get you in
here.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
So after the match, Mundo grabs the mic and he lays claim to a shot, maybe not an official shot, but says, look, that earthquake to Mil Muertes, that earthquake that shook you up as a boy is going to be nothing compared to the end of the world. And of course that brings out one of our favorites, the machine himself, Cage.
I thought Earthquake was going to come up, but I remember he's dead. Yeah. R.I.P. Sorry.
Earthquake.
Yeah.
We love John Santa.
I love him.
But the thing that I love about Cage is that Cage is what happened if you took, like, a cartoon or a TV show that incorporates a wrestling storyline. Like, remember when, like, Boy Meets World would have a wrestling storyline?
Yeah.
But, like, when a mainstream show would portray pro wrestlers, that's Brian Cage. Like, he's every single person's preconceived notion of what a pro wrestler is, but with the added ability of being an awesome wrestler.
He's insane.
He's so...
The Swolverine.
Just
when I heard that.
80s.
Dude, I popped so hot for that.
He's the 80s incarnate between the bald head, the mohawk, the singlet, all of just the plain straight up, I'll break you in half, boy. Like, lines like that.
Just jacked to
love
gills.
Cage. Just,
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all in with the... I'm in with the Swolverine.
He is a Swolverine,
I'm hoping that he can... What I want to see from him, and I know they don't quite do vignettes, but, I mean, come on. Put him in the first scene, the weight room, have him work on his biceps.
Wasn't that, like, season one?
Here's what I
want to
see.
Giant tires?
No, here's... Guys, here's what I want to see. We talked about Mortal Kombat last week. We talked about Street Fighter at the top of the show. Let's talk about Tekken. All right? If Prince Puma is king, then Cage has to be Jack. And we need to see a factory just putting together different cages.
And he's a machine. That's brilliant.
He's a literal machine. We got to get Prototype Cage. We got to get Cage 2. All of that stuff. Guys, if you play Tekken, tweet me. Let me know I'm not alone.
I love you so much.
You know.
I call him Charlie Steiner because I think he looks like Charlie Haas and Scott Steiner.
Interesting. Okay.
And the singlet. It's like that. It's that whole vibe.
Sure,
it is. He does. He stands out completely from everyone else I've seen so far.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. He's a beast.
He's just the most American of the American members of the Lucha Underground roster.
That's great.
He's so good, and just he's got so many different catchphrases. Not to jump ahead too much, but I did attend a set of tapings, and one thing that the crowd absolutely loves doing now is when Cage is in the ring. It's and it's so much fun.
That's good.
It's awesome.
The Lucha Destroyer, right? That's what they call
him. Yeah, exactly. And so we get Cage going for Mil Muertes, but also facing off with Johnny Mundo. That's another thing that I love, is that everyone, whether they're face or heel, has a legitimate beef with Mil Muertes and a legitimate claim to trying to go after that title.
He looks so tired about it. He's like, he's so defeated this week compared to last week. He's just like, he's up there, and every time someone says something, he's like, I gotta lean forward and get into this. I'm so hurt.
So we see Cage just plow through Johnny Mundo after they exchange words with a shoulder tackle.
He gets attacked from behind.
After the cheap shot, yeah.
He's like,
I'll teach you a lesson.
And just steamrolls him. Just sends him inside.
Very Shao Kahn shoulder tackle.
Amazing. It was the shadow shoulder charge. Guys, this is going to be a running theme for the entirety of this season. After this, we get to see the lair. This is the first time we've seen the lair of Marty the Moth Martinez.
Love it.
Now, we saw him throughout season one. I don't know if you're familiar with Marty the Moth yet.
I'm getting familiar.
Basically, his story is he started as just a fan, kind of like a wannabe. He was obsessed with proving that he had Aztec blood and that he belonged in the temple. And everyone just kind of laughed at him and wrote him off. And that drove him a little crazy. And he became the Moth, kidnapped Sexy Star, tied her up in a cocoon of rope, and now he's got her in his very, very nice living room, just tied up.
Just chained, handcuffed to the chair.
He's very well-to-do, has kind of a sweater tied around his neck. Seems like he might have been stricken by a bit of affluenza. You know, one of these guys where he's rich and he's entitled, and he's like, you know what, I think I'm going to kidnap luchadors now.
Very dandy-esque.
Very dandy, absolutely, yeah, like you said. Dandy, I know this isn't the American Horror Story After Show, but guys, I loved that season. And Dandy was phenomenal. But that's exactly what it is. He's so giddy about everything, and he's so happy about everything, and he keeps talking about his sister, who I'm very, very excited to see when she finally does appear.
Yeah,
you know, he mentioned that if you think I'm crazy, wait till you see my sister at the end of season one. So I'm excited to see what they've got in store for her.
Maybe it's, hopefully it's not Victoria.
Ooh, interesting.
No, I'm kidding. I love I always loved her. Oh. I don't know what she's doing now.
Oh, Victoria's the best.
But crazy, and she can sell crazy. Dobson, right? Crazy Mary Dobson, right? Is that her name? Madman Pondo's lady, right?
Right. Okay. I don't know. Is it going
to I don't know if it's her, but I'm just trying to think of like crazy female wrestlers that would fit this role.
Right.
You know? Whenever I think of crazy female wrestlers, Daphne is the first one that pops up.
Oh, I love Daphne.
She was so good.
Her, David Flair, and Crowbar, I loved that whole era. So good.
So good.
But yeah, so I'm definitely curious. And this scene, just speaking from a cinematic. There we go. You know, words and stuff.
Movies.
but just from that kind of a viewpoint, I loved the cinematography and the colors that they used, and especially just the performance on Marty the Moth's side.
Very creepy.
Very like very kind of Buffalo Bill. Like, yeah. Was you a great big fat person? Oh, would you?
Worry. I love it.
Worry.
Oh, guys.
But I'm interested because I'm not as familiar with him, so I don't know like what his... I haven't seen him fight. I don't know what like his finisher is. I don't know his setup, so I'm really excited to see like you know what his moveset is. That's what I like to wait for.
Yeah. So it's gonna be a lot of fun seeing where this story kind of unfolds. Elsewhere, we've got a brand new competitor. A challenger appears, guys. We've got the Darewolf, PJ Black, and we find out he's addicted to adrenaline, and he's addicted to you know taking chances and taking risks. And we see him like fighting these masked biker luchadors.
He's driving a motorcycle, and then two people pull up next to him, and you think they're part of his crew. And then he pulls over to the Pink Motel, gets off his bike, and is like, okay, we're doing this thing.
Right.
You know, and then he just starts to fight these two biker guys. And but you're what, like, I love, what is going on?
What I love about this is that they had masks on underneath the helmets.
Yes, that was great. Like,
they're really good at it.
These are just luchadors in life. Like, they just live that way.
Like Juggalos.
Juggalos. Speaking, what a segue. And because we've got the Chocolate Juggalo himself on the air. You know, we saw the debuting PJ Black, but he would make his debut against, guys, it's the return of the Mac.
Return.
We got the Mac live. What's happening, Willie?
Willie Mac.
Not much, chilling at the house, watching some Metalocalypse.
He's watching Metalocalypse. I forgot Willie loves Adult Swim.
Nice.
But guys, if you don't know, Willie Mack is one of the most preternaturally gifted, talented performers I've ever met in my life. Such a good performer. he won't tell you, but it's true. Now, Willie, tell us a little bit about working with PJ Black. This is your first time working with him, right?
Yeah, it was pretty cool because I've seen like a bunch of stuff and I was surprised I got in there and tangled with him, and it turned out pretty good from what people say.
Yeah, definitely. How do you think your guys' styles meshed?
Pretty damn good. We didn't have, like, no slips up or nothing like that, and I guess it delivered.
Mm-hmm. Now, we saw you all throughout season one. Tell us what it was like getting to work with Killshot, getting to work with Big Rick.
Oh, it was pretty cool, but... Mm-hmm. It was funny how they stuck all the black dudes together, but it's all good. A good experience, because I think me and Killshot was a good team on our own, but then they added in Big Rick, and hey, Ezekiel Jackson, it's all about that domination, so I was cool with that.
That's right. I love that theme song. This is what you call domination. So
he knows
good.
All the words to that.
The Brawl for All theme. Absolutely. But that's
that,
why.
That's it. That
yeah,
is
they
that,
sampled
yeah.
the Brawl for All theme. But that was one of the things that I loved about that trio is that between Mac, between Killshot, between Big Rick, it was such different styles and such dynamic styles that all kind of complemented each other. You know, we had Killshot was kind of, you know, the smallest of the three, and he would use a lot of high flying stuff, a lot of kick stuff like that. Willie, obviously, being a crazy hybrid of high flying, of strikes, of power, and then of course Big Rick being the muscle of the three. You know, I just love seeing them kind of get in there and tear it up. Now, Willie, one thing that I wanted to ask you is that, you know, you were trained at WPW, Lucha Libre style. Now, how did you kind of draw upon your experience as, I guess, a quote-unquote classically trained luchador as part of the Lucha Underground roster?
Well, I guess it fit in kind of perfect because everybody knows, well, not everybody, but some people who know me, I trained Lucha my first year of wrestling and then North American wrestling right after. So when I got in there with those luchadors, they were surprised I could keep up. I'm like, what style is going to be slow and be like, bubbling around the ring. Oh, I can't do business, son.
Now, how is it challenging kind of having to switch gears, basically, if you were in there with an American-style wrestler versus if you were in there with a classic luchador?
No, not really. Mm. They just know to keep up with me, and I keep up with them, and it's all good.
Nice.
Now, we know that, you know, obviously the crowds, the fans of Lucha Underground are insane. You know, they're so supportive and they're so just kind of emphatic about this product. What would you say, that being on Lucha Underground and this sort of exposure has done for your career so far?
Well, it's funny when you walk into like Walmart or Dollar General or anywhere, they'd be like, hey, you the Mac from Lucha Underground, right? I'm like, damn straight. That was pretty good to like people who probably never even watch wrestling, because people who don't watch wrestling will watch Lucha Underground and they say they love it, and that's the best thing that they're watching so far. So it's done me some good exposure, more than I already had.
Yeah, definitely. And what do you think it is that makes Lucha Underground so popular that has made people kind of fall in love with it?
Wrestling. Real wrestling. It ain't like no talking for like, say you got a 3-hour show and you only see like one or two, three good matches. Lucha Underground, you get a good match from the beginning to the end, and you got the promos in between that don't take up that much time, so I guess that's what people like, because it's like instant. It's just like Twitter. Like, you send a tweet, people going to see it. When you see our show, we're going to deliver right after we do a promo or something. It's all action.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a really good point. Mm-hmm. So there's no time to be like, oh, I want to change the channel.
Exactly.
Like, what the hell is this?
It's just all just 100 miles an hour the whole time. Now, we saw, you know, obviously you got in there, tore it up with the Darryl Wolf with PJ Black.
What a match.
It's an amazing, amazing match.
Great announcer.
I mean, just such dynamic. A lot of really deep South African references for Matt Stryker that I had to Google while we were watching it. But you know, we saw the Mac pull out the win kind of out of nowhere with that catch stunner. Tell us a little bit about that finish.
Well, since I can't do the Chocolate Thunder Driver, since like a couple of people do something similar to it, I said, hell, after Ultima Lucha, when I hit Cage with the stunner, I'm like, might as well bring that back and make him my finisher. So there we go.
There we go. And that was, guys, if you didn't see Ultima Lucha, there's such an amazing moment from Mac's match with Cage where he's got two beers in his hands, slams them together, hits Cage with a stunner, full on Austin style, head wagon, gets right in his face. Willie, it reminded me, you're the guy that told me about Stone Cold E.T. It reminded me about Stone Cold E.T.
That's kind of why I do it. See, when the Mac steps in the temple, son, you're going to get a beer, what? You're going to get hit with a stunner, what? And then I'm going to drink some more beer, and hell, I hit you with one more stunner, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold Willie Mac said so. Oh, hell yeah. What?
Oh, my God. Well, Willie, thank you so, so much. We're going to get into talking about the rest of the show, but tell our wonderful viewers where they can find you online and what you've got coming up.
Well, you can hit me up at Twitter, Willie_Mac. Instagram, the same thing. I got too many friends on Facebook, so I made a fan page. It's called Official Willie Mac, so get on there and like that. And I'm going to do Lucha Vavoom on the 10th and 11th of this month, downtown at the Mayan Theater.
Nice.
Then I'm going to be making my way down to the Bay for APW on the 26th. And I'm going to do Pro Wrestling Revolution on the 27th. So it should be two good shows.
There we go.
Four good shows.
There we go.
Come out there and check out the Mac Man or Chuck Latte Caliente at Lucha Vroom and keep watching your boy on the El Rey Network with Lucha Underground. We keep it real.
Well, thank you so Willie. Much, Willie. I appreciate it. Hope to see you again soon, brother.
Hell yes.
Stay peace. Oh, the Mac, absolutely one of my favorite
so
humans,
that,
wrestlers, yeah. just people in general.
He just won me over.
Such a good guy.
Yeah, if you guys haven't listened to his appearance on Colt Cabana's Art of Wrestling, you'll learn more about him than you ever thought you would. Just an incredible person, performer, everything.
One of my favorite things about his match with PJ that he had was like PJ chopped him and Willie chops him back, and it instantly brought me back to his first match with Roderick Strong at PWG.
Love that moment.
Where they were just going toe-to-toe, and, like, you chop Willie, he'll chop you back until you, like, stop and go for another move. He's just like, let's go.
So Willie's like, got hands, from being in the ring with him, Willie's got hands like frying pans. Oh, like, they're so heavy. And those chops, they're loud, they're even more painful than they sound.
I was just waiting to see. I was like, okay, like, oh, chop, chop, chop. I was like, okay, PJ's about to grab a headlock, or PJ's about to throw a forearm, or
going.
Shoot him off, because Willie's not going to stop.
He'll trade him with
you. Yeah, like, and then, like, that happened twice.
Right,
so,
right,
like,
right.
Once in the match, and then PJ's like, oh, shit, throws a forearm, and then later on, they started again, he's like, oh, shit, I forgot.
how does that work? I just had a quick question about.
What's that?
So he can wrestle in a lot of different promotions.
Yes.
Along with Lucha.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's
yeah.
almost, it's kind of cool, because it's almost like West Coast territory. It's like.
Sure.
Willie's, like, king of, it's like California, anything California now, he's, like, all over.
Absolutely.
It's so much fun.
One of the things that people really know Willie for is being kind of one of the best guys on this coast.
See, that's so cool. Like, that's so cool to kind of build an area and build a territory.
Absolutely.
Like
and he'll rep it. He'll rep it all day. He loves. Sure. Hey, he has so much pride and so much love for where he comes from.
Nice.
And for the Insane Clown Posse. That's That was that segue. It was so funny that you mentioned Juggalos, because Willie calls himself the Chocolate Juggalo. And there's one camera shot during his match where you can clearly see his Hatchet Man tattoo on his shoulder.
Oh, nice.
Willie does it for the family, brother. Whoop, whoop. now, after this match, we see another new face, another new competitor in the temple. We see a vignette featuring Cobra Moon. Now, what do we think about Cobra Moon?
I instantly thought of The Quest when he was like, Snake!
Here we are again. The Quest, like, The Quest and Bloodsport are going to be brought up a lot, too.
I thought, like, because her mask was kind of weird and the way her hair was pulled
forward. It was interesting,
sure. I was like, who is this chick? And then she kicked the shit out of, like, four dudes.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, she's got that Jackie Chan kind of
Cobra Moon.
Yeah,
strikes next week.
And one little tiny thing that I noticed the second time that I was watching this episode is that at the end when she strikes that snake pose and the Cobra Moon comes up on screen, it's moving along with her arm.
Is it really?
And it's such like it reminds me of like an exploitation film, which is obviously so perfect for the El Rey Network and for a show that's executive produced by Robert Rodriguez. You know, it's a little. Little things like that, you know, that really set it apart.
Definitely. I love the jacket too. I have an affinity for wrestlers that have something to do with snakes.
Sure.
So when I saw the snake jacket, I'm like, okay, this is gonna be pretty cool. This is gonna be a cool gimmick.
Yeah, she says she's been called sinful, she's been called evil, she's been called sexy, and she's been called venomous. But all of that together makes her deadly. I am excited to see her debut.
Yes.
I love the fact that Lucha Underground does these intergender matches, so she could debut against literally anyone.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. It's like, oh, who's she going to face? Well, there's only Sexy Star or Eva Lee.
Right.
No, it's like, who's she going to face? Anyone on the roster.
It could be anyone.
It could be Mil Muertes, you know?
It could be Masquerita Sagrada. I mean,
oh,
who knows?
Oh, that would be so good.
I have a question for both of you.
Good. Sure.
Okay, since the show's an hour,
uh-huh.
and then last week, there were so many people on the show last week that we didn't see this week.
Right.
Do you think it hurts like their brand as wrestlers? Like, do you think that not being seen? I mean, I know there could be overkill every week, every week, every week. But this week, I was kind of looking forward just to see Eva Lee because, like, you know,
sure,
she had such a huge moment last week, and I kind of wanted to see like, okay, how's she doing? What's going on? And maybe they'll do it next week,
right?
But I missed her, but maybe that's a good thing because maybe because I know I'm going to come back, and like I missed. seeing
right,
her.
Right, exactly. And I think it does. I think in a way it does kind of – it's a good thing because it gives you a break. It gives stories time to breathe. You know, she just got off of this title match with Mil Muertes. So it does make sense also in theory in storyline terms that she would take a couple weeks to kind of recover. You know, this was the biggest challenge that she's ever faced. So so I think there's pros to that. What were you going to say, Jimbo?
Real quick, not to like backtrack, but we see this awesome vignette for PJ Black, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes into a match with Willie Mack. Mm-hmm. In any other Fed, you would automatically assume, well, he's going to fight a dude who's already standing in the ring, who doesn't get an entrance.
Right.
He's going to come out and win. So then to see a top name guy like PJ Black go in and lose to Willie.
And that was another thing.
I'm
glad you brought that up because that is such a unique thing that we don't usually see. Is we always, it's like you said, we always expect if someone's debuting, they're for sure going to win and they're going to win decisively. But in this, PJ Black got caught with that stunner coming off the ropes. And not only did he lose, but he didn't look any worse for it. It didn't make me think like, oh, this guy's an idiot.
This guy's a chump. Why did they bring... Oh, he won't be here next week. It's like, what's he going to do next week to get redemption?
It made the Mac look that much stronger by comparison. And it did kind of tell the story. Like, look, just because you're, you know, this experienced guy and you're debuting, Mac's been there for the entirety of season one. So he has a little bit of a home turf advantage.
He took a cinder block to the face.
Right?
You know?
You're not going to put Willie
down.
You're
not going to put him down.
I know that you're pressed a little bit with time and everything, but I know that part of the charm of the show is that it's a small arena. It's underground. It's like, you know, it's something that you shouldn't be seeing. But do you think that the show is getting bigger and bigger every season? You said season three is, you know, it's got approved.
Right.
So how do you, you know, if the show keeps getting bigger and bigger, can you afford to keep the roster small and the crowds this small if there's a want for people, you know, for attendance? Like, if there's people that want to show up, can you keep the charm of the show?
And that's a delicate line that they're going to have to draw.
PWG problem.
That's exactly right. Yeah, one of the great things that people love about Gorilla is that intimate venue in Reseda, and I think it's a lot of the same with the Temple in Boyle Heights. It's this intimate feel, but there is a very real possibility that it could outgrow itself.
So cool there. Like, the energy and the atmosphere there, when you walk in, you're like, holy shit.
Right, You know there's another 1,000 people that want tickets.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And that is another thing that creates this demand, that you have to be on the ball when it comes to getting tickets.
It also adds to the mystique of the temple as a concept.
Like, sure.
You have to be chosen to even be able to attend an event at the temple.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, we're like the three dudes driving around looking for this fight club.
Right, exactly. These aren't fans, these are believers. It's in the terminology itself.
So can you replicate the temple? Let's say they have a big blowout show, like again at the end of the season.
Like Ultima Lucha.
Yeah, Ultima Lucha and Ultima Lucha 2. Uh-huh. Can you replicate it in some way at a bigger
on
venue?
A bigger scale?
Like a weekend of wrestling events or something?
I mean, if you know, if you know you can sell 30,000 seats for Lucha Underground.
Interestingly enough, I think a lot of that would come down to set design.
Yeah.
And down to kind of the production value of it. I think people would be on board with a bigger venue as long as it felt mystical.
Same.
And it felt like a temple, if not the temple.
Because you can't go from having like amazing like aerial cameras that show like like the sacrificial symbol, you know, to like, oh, we're gonna run in this American market or Anaheim market.
Right, exactly. We've got a throne of skulls on the stage. Yeah. Like, it can only go uphill from there.
Yeah. I think you can do it. Get a killer set design,
sure.
And you could replicate it.
Right.
You could do it outdoors. Indoors.
I do want to see like what the WrestleMania equivalent of the Lucha Underground Temple would be.
I think down in Carson.
Over the step ups?
The small one they do boxing and tennis.
Oh, sure.
It's so small, but it's you could do something cool. Yeah. Like the crowd, like Lakers games. I don't know if you have Lakers, you can only see like the first three rows.
Right.
And everything else is really dark. So, you know how in other wrestling shows you go to their house shows, everything's lit up and you can see signs. And no, you make it just so you hardly can see the crowd. Like, you can really make it. I think you can make it happen.
Yeah. It could definitely.
We're getting excited.
I'm excited. Yeah, who knows? Season three, who knows what that's going to bring. But guys, let's get into the main event of the evening. Handicap match action. We've got the Trios Champions, the Disciples of Death.
D&D.
If you don't know, that's Trece, Barrio Negro, and El Sinestro de la Muerte.
Who's the one that likes to wear a lot of clothes?
That would be Barrio Negro, I believe. He's the one that wears the top.
He's working on his physique.
He's working on it.
For a split second, I thought they were the Young Bucks in masks because they kept throwing super kicks.
Oh, that's
their true. Throwing they so many super kicks. I was like, are these, is that the Bucks?
But the Disciples of Death, accompanied as always by Katrina and that rock, as always, taking on the team of Prince Puma and Pentagon Jr.
Who changed his mask.
Yeah, yeah. He's got, I wonder how many. He's got a lot of different masks.
Those things are not cheap, dude.
No. Yeah, no.
Dude, he sells them for like $200 each.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. All right.
But this, what I loved about this match is that I wasn't expecting there to be as much teamwork as there was between the Disciples of Death.
Really? You know,
with them, it seems like they're kind of, they're almost interchangeable.
Because they're the Foot Clan.
They're the Foot Clan. They're these, you know, electrified skeletons that do Mil Muertes and Katrina's bidding. And so I wasn't expecting them to come out and be busting out legitimate tag team double team moves.
Okay, let's talk about that. They do this sick double hip toss to backbreaker,
right.
And you're thinking, what's this third guy going to do? Is he going to do a flipping blockbuster? Is he going to do like a gnarly flip, another kick? He kicks him in the ass.
Right.
And
the
I
ass.
Loved how like Matt Stryker's like, oh, kick to the back hamstring, and Vampiro's like, I never understood why you just kick a guy in the ass. Like, yeah. It's totally just like, no. Let's Vampiro, call it for what it is.
Yeah. Vampiro was on point with his commentary tonight.
He was really so, on.
He had the doctor's orders.
Yeah, I love that too.
Why are you talking about this?
Stop it.
Stop asking.
I got doctor's orders.
Yeah, that was definitely. I don't know if that's
when you'd cue the sad trumpet on the right. on the soundboard, be like.
But yeah, I don't know if that kick to the backside was quite intentional. I don't know, but
like if he got up too soon, like they were supposed to do something cool, but he like leaned up. Yeah, and the guy was like,
I think
shit,
that might have been what it was. I don't know.
Yeah,
but. You know, between the teamwork that we have on the side of the Disciples of Death, we also see a lot of obvious dissension. I mean, we started the show with Pentagon and Puma fighting each other, so we knew that they weren't going to make it through as a cohesive unit necessarily.
I wasn't really feeling Prince Puma's headgear like.
Oh no!
Like King Cuarto.
Right?
No, I think like you. Everyone should be kind of different, and seeing him come out like that, I was like, "Oh, you just
But that was a holdover from his feud with King Cuerno.
Yeah.
You know, King Cuerno comes out with the deer's head, and so in turn, Prince Puma came out with the Puma's head. But I agree, I wasn't expecting him to keep it after that feud had wrapped
up. It's the classic hat match.
It's the hat match.
Who has a better hat?
Hat on a pole match, guys.
Hat on a pole match.
We see this interesting game of one-upsmanship being played between Prince Puma and Pentagon Jr., where, like, Pentagon Jr. is just, like, he's, like, the a-hole little brother that just keeps needling him and just keeps stealing his thunder. Like, oh, you did that? Oh, well, I'm going to go and do this now.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely, like, the bully.
Right, like, exactly.
And I love his, because he's got, you know, he's not, like, jacked. Mm-hmm. But I love that because there's variations in different body types.
He looks
and
like
sizes.
He could legitimately mess someone up.
Yeah, but he's got like those little arms. Mm-hmm. He's got those like because sure. compared because he's gigantic in the sit. Like he's got such a huge base to him.
Right, right.
He's got like these like. It's almost better that he's got kind of a, like a smaller arm look.
Right.
It doesn't look like he can mess you up, but he's like, I got this shit.
Exactly, yeah.
That's cool.
And not only that, but those overhand chops.
I love
it. Oh my
God. He takes the glove off and then rips the wrist tape off. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is not
going to
be good.
Yeah. And there is, once again, going back to the temple, there is something about it that amplifies everything to a supernatural degree.
I said it while we were watching it, Ty. That was a chunky shot.
It was chunk. It really was. There was weight to it. Like, it was a slap and it was a loud crack, but there was heavy weight to it that you just felt in your soul.
To use a Mark term, that was gross.
It was gross.
On my notes, it just says Pentagon chops, wow.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Exactly. No, and I love when he gets really into taking off the gloves and he'll kind of toss them over.
He chucks it to the ref. He's
sometimes,
just like, hey,
yeah.
ref, take this. I gotta Right. do work.
And they love it. That crowd could not love Pentagon Jr. more. And what I love is seeing guys that were such dedicated heels or rudos in season one going now to these beloved baby faces like Pentagon, like Cage, you know, guys like that.
It just shows you that fans just want to be entertained.
Right.
You know, like, if you're entertaining them, they're going to cheer for you.
Right. They'll gravitate towards the best performers. And so... So as the match goes on, we see this game of one-upsmanship continue. We see the teamwork between the Disciples of Death. Eventually, Prince Puma hits the 630 splash, but sneaking in with the blind tag is Pentagon Jr. just stealing the pin, and Puma is not happy about that. and it doesn't take long for them to pretty much instantly come to blows over it.
It's like they're back in the weight room again.
Exactly.
Minus the curls.
Right, classic exactly. Weight room fight. We didn't, you know, if he had just busted out that flash kick again, we see Pentagon Jr. hit that backstabber, and Prince Puma falls forward right into position for the arm break. And it's such an interesting moment because you have this feeling of almost like dread where it's like,
already?
It's like if someone gets their arm broken by Pentagon Jr., that's tantamount to being killed off in the show, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, with the exception of Mil Muertes, obviously. But we've seen guys get their arms broken and never come back from it.
Who hasn't come back?
I think more like enhancement talent, like Ricky Mandel, Vinny Mazzaro.
I was just going to say, wasn't it one of like B-Boy's crew?
Argenis. Not one of B-Boy's crew, but kind of like, just the sort of the lower tier kind of guys.
Yeah. That's a great, you got your last 2 minutes of the show.
Right.
You need some drama.
But what I love, and another thing that I love is that Prince Puma, I think, might be one of the only people that we've seen just legitimately fight out of it. He fights up into an arm drag and escapes it. And I don't think we've seen anyone just literally, we've seen people get saved from it. We haven't seen people just straight up escape from it.
Yeah.
And so I think, obviously, that paints Prince Puma in even more of a heroic light. And so now Pentagon Jr. has all of these stories with all these people all at once. He's got stories with Mil Muertes. He's got stories with the Disciples of Death. He's got stories with Prince Puma. I mean, everyone hates Pentagon Jr. and everyone loves him.
Ivelisse.
With Ivelisse. Like, absolutely. I mean, he's got, you can see on Melissa Santos's face when she announces him that there's kind of lingering animosity, obviously, between them.
You can see everything on her face when she announces everybody.
Right, exactly.
It's like one eye. It's like, ah.
But to wrap up the show, and I love that they have mid-credit scenes and end-credit scenes. I said this last week, but it's even better. We see the continuation of the tale of El Dragon Azteca. At the end of season one, Black Lotus killed the original Dragon Azteca. Straight up killed him. That's the second time someone's literally died in Lucha Underground. Black Lotus killed him, but now we see his protege. We see El Dragon Azteca Jr., but off screen,
who's telling this
we hear
story?
A very familiar voice as his mentor. He says, and this voice says, you know, I was the one that was supposed to take Dragon Azteca's mask, but I chose my own path. And, you know, I'm pretty happy with the mask that I chose. Enter Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
Woo! I mean, and what a camera shot that it was just coming out of the
darkness.
Shadows.
Yeah.
Just that it's such an iconic mask. You know, what did you think of that, Jaren?
I'm not as familiar with, like, you know, who was killed off last season.
Well, Dragon Azteca is, I believe, a creation of Lucha Underground. So I don't think he was an existing character.
Okay. I love Rey. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it looks like he's back in shape, you know, from things that you've seen, like, and everything.
Sure.
Because it's tough. Because when you're in the game for so long, it's like he's older now. He's like, but was he around last season?
Rey Mysterio? No, this is all brand new.
I don't know what they're going to do with him. Because he obviously teased his past a little bit. You know,
right.
Like, oh, I went on a different path.
Sure.
You know, I was ignored in WCW. No, but that was a great path.
Sure.
But I don't know what the heck they're going to do with him. Because it looks like he's going to be kind of a managerial role.
Mm-hmm.
But he'll come out every now and then. I just don't know. But I'd love to see him kind of in that role to see if he can pull it off.
Sure, sure.
I think you're right. I think he'll be like how Conan was to Prince Puma. He'll be that way for...
Well, but before we elaborate on this, because it's about that time, Mark, hit us up. Let's get some predictions going.
Nice.
Oh. Love me some theremin.
Ring the bell.
Love me some theremin, guys. Like, it just, it feels like it's an Ed Wood movie in here when that happens. And we've got that red lighting.
I love it. I like the red.
So good. But guys, okay, so let's continue where we left off. What do you think Rey Mysterio's role is going to be?
I think he'll be, Dragon Azteca? Is that how you say it? I think he'll be like his mentor.
Okay.
Until like he gets taken out with a broken arm.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rey has to step in the ring and go against like Pentagon.
Ooh, or, interesting. Like, okay.
I really want to see Pentagon versus Willie too.
Sure.
I want to see that down.
Absolutely.
I think that'll be great. But
right.
Yeah, I think he'll be a mentor, but eventually we'll get in the ring. But like you said, like he's in his later years, who knows what kind of a shape his knees are in, you know, like how much he could really do, but I definitely think he's going to mix it up. For sure.
Yeah. Jared, predictions.
Man, for Rey.
For Rey or anyone.
We'll just stick with Rey.
Okay.
I want to see him as a manager. I want to see if he can pull it off. The promo was really cool. But I'd love to see him, and I think it'd be good for the brand, So I know that they're showcasing a lot of younger guys, but I think it'd be kind of cool maybe to have him win the title at some point and then put over someone big later in the show.
Okay.
But I think he's got enough left in the tank to pull off a few more matches, you know, and you know, you don't have to do anything long.
Sure.
Have him win the title legit. Mm-hmm. Everyone would love it. That's huge press for that. And then, you know, have him put over someone, you know, later on.
Like Rage.
Sure, yeah. Now, I think, in terms of my predictions, I think we may see some interaction between him and the other top technicos on the show, namely Phoenix and Prince Puma. You know, maybe, I don't know where Dragon Azteca Jr. fits into all that. Maybe they form kind of a stable. Who knows? But I think we might see him more in multi-matches first before we see him kind of go out on his own and maybe go after the championship.
Yeah. That'd be so
Makes
cool.
sense.
So who knows, guys?
That belt's gigantic.
Right? It's a giant belt. It's so much Aztec gold.
Yeah. In first season, they had a belt and Brian Cage ripped it in half.
Oh, my God. I love this guy. This guy is just shooting at the top of my list.
Cage's the best.
He's Wolverine.
He's
I'm not a man. I'm a machine.
He's a machine. He's got so many catchphrases, and they're all designed to make you love him even more, and it works.
Yeah.
But, guys, once again, so much to talk about after only two episodes. But for now, we're going to wrap this up. We're going to be right back here, same time next week, 10 p.m. Thursday night, talking about episode 3. But for now, guys, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at TheJimboSlice. You can buy this documentary at HighSpots.com or tweet me and buy it from me, and I'll send you it signed with some goodies. Brian Cage is in this. Willie Mack is in this.
There you go.
Who's your favorite wrestler?
My favorite?
I'm sure he's
my
in this.
My favorite. Ooh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Man, I'm a big, you know what? I'm a big Kevin Steen fan, and he's in that.
He's in that for sure.
Absolutely.
I love it. That's a great DVD. Check it out. At Gilkerson Radio on Twitter. And if you love old school 80s and 90s wrestlers that are just jacked up, hit me up, because I'm pumped about Cage.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as always, you can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, at Ty Matthews PMA, as well as various other after shows on the AfterBuzz TV network. You got Monday Night Raw. You got The Magicians. You got Pitch Slapped. You got this, Lucha Underground. You got Second Chance on Sunday. Guys, I'm like the NWO. I'm taking over. But this has got to be... gotta be my favorite show. I mean, I really, really love talking about this with you guys, and I love talking about this with you guys. So remember to tweet us, follow us on Instagram. If you're on iTunes, if you're nasty, leave a 5-star review, rating, you know, all that stuff. Download, subscribe, all those other buzzwords that podcasters say. If you're on YouTube, give us one of those nifty thumbs up.
And they all watched this past week. Thank you.
Exactly.
Awesome. Thank
exactly.
you.
Exactly. But guys, we love it. But until next week. Viva la lucha!
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Swole you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.